Mind Hunter. That funky Hunter.
Yeah, let's see if this gets
Mind
distracting.
Hunter.
To have Mind
that
Hunter.
Funky Hunter.
All the, like, we just, it's just been playing on my TV all day.
It's beautifully shot.
It's beautifully shot and just elegantly crafted.
That David Fincher. You know, people are going to know his name one day.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah, but so if you've never joined us before, or even if you have, this is Cahoots.
Hello. Welcome.
I fucked it up already. Usually I say our names first.
Oh, well.
We're
just going by Cahoots now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I'm Cuh. She's Hoots.
Hey.
No, that was a terrible joke.
No, that was a great joke. I embrace it.
But yeah, no, my name's Ben Collins.
I'm Kate Devaney. Soft V.
Soft V?
I don't know. Sometimes, though, you know, growing...
Devaney?
Sometimes they... I don't know what... So my name's... We're Irish. Like, mm-hmm. Devaney comes from Galway.
Very.
Yeah, but like, there's... some spelling of it with a capital V, and it's kind of, I remember being a kid and someone did that and I was like, oh
like
I
a like a
yeah.
D lowercase e capital V.
Yeah, and yeah,
I can see that,
but it was funny because it's not how we spell it, and then I was like, what's that, you know?
Anyway. Yeah, that seems like that's probably older fashioned.
So soft V,
soft
on the
V. Yeah, not the like the real hardcore, like double, I don't know what they call that.
Yeah, the double uppercase.
My younger sister Joanna, her name is spelled capital J, lowercase o, capital A in an A. And I've never been, you don't see that a lot. I don't know what that is. I don't know why my parents chose to do it that way or why, what the difference.
Surely there's some history or, yeah. I don't know.
That's another thing that we could look up.
But we probably won't.
Yeah, not right now. But so if you haven't already turned this off because we're just babbling about our names and stuff, you would maybe want to know that Kate and I are both screenwriters. We're not writing partners, though. I realize this hasn't really been... I make reference to Luke a lot. He's literally texting me right now, which is maybe what I think. So it's like, just to avoid confusion, when I say that Kate and I are both screenwriters, we are both screenwriters. We are not screenwriters together. I have a writing partner named Luke who is texting me right now about something or other.
And I fly solo.
Yep,
most
which means
of the time.
You make twice the money.
Hey, boys. Noah.
Yeah, there's a little fun. I mean, if no one's ever thought about it before, when you have a writing partner, that means you, in theory, you can do twice the work.
That's true, though, because you have written, well, you've been edit at a professional level longer than I, but you've also, just in a year, I mean, your output is twice as much. I wonder why.
It can be. It's certainly, I mean, I have friends that are solo writers that, you know, it just depends. But yeah, the idea is that yeah, we have to split everything 50-50. So in theory, you book more jobs if you're able to do that, and that it balances out. But, you know, whatever. But all that to say.
It is super fun, though, I will say. Like, Ben and I met in a writing room, and Luke, his writing partner, was also there. But the process of working with somebody, and
yeah,
it's so fun. And like, I have a couple TV projects that I'm working with, you know, showrunners and people who have created shows already, you know, and just in terms of like developing before you would go and then pitch. But it's like, it is really, really fun to have that back and forth. 'Cause I just came at it with a lot of gusto and drive.
Yeah, you've just been sitting,
shoved my way into
alone
the...
in a room, yeah, in your pajamas.
And it's nice to be in a position and to have experiences where you get the back and forth. Because you do, I mean, you blow through ideas in a good way, you know,
yes,
and you're able to kind of get to like what works.
Well, yeah, and what's funny is that like, so yeah, so I mean, that's actually, it's good you mentioned that, because that would be the next part of the story, is that, yeah, like, so Kate and I became friends when we worked on in a TV writer's room together, and my writing partner, my lovely partner, Luke, was also there. And like, yeah, even for us, we're used to having the two of us, which means enough of that back and forth and enough of that kind of like creative energy, but we still drive each other crazy or just go crazy mutually. Like, you know, like we will both hit dead ends. So even for two writers being in that room was like a huge breath of fresh air, and like getting to sort of get different perspectives from people and different experiences from people. And like, you know, we had people who'd been working in television for a long time. We had people that, you know, that we'd never worked in television. And like, you came from like an entirely different background and like had all this other production experience that no one in the room had. And it was like, that was really cool and made just everybody's, you know, in addition to just your personal lives, like who was married and who was, you know, had kids and who didn't and all that stuff. It was really, it was an interesting experience. And, you know, people are great. It's great well, to be around people.
And we've mentioned Akiva before, but I know the Akiva Goldsman, who's a Oscar winning screenwriter, but that Ben and I both worked with. But like one of the big things he says is that coming from writing screenplays in solitude often, you know, to then go into Fringe was like his first, you know, entree into a writer's room. And he, you know, he and Jeff Pinkner became good friends and started working together a lot. But part of what like Akiva tried to do moving forward, I know, is like he's like, this is so much fun. Like, I can't leave this behind. Like, how can, you know, and the sort of effectiveness of that and like being able to.
Yeah, the much publicized writers rooms that he's been doing with feature writers specifically.
I mean, yeah.
Also TV writers. But like that is a thing. And I think that it's, you know. I mean, we're sort of just turning this into a screenwriting conversation at the top, but to be, you know, in cahoots with other writers,
titular line there,
is a fun experience, and it's because you talk about a lot of things, you make a lot of jokes, you get places, and that's why we started doing this podcast, because we found it very fun and funny. And at some point the word cahoots came up and we started joking about it and about what kind of movie would be called cahoots. And that led to a bunch of jokes in the room and that led to a bunch of jokes in our conversations as friends. And then thought it would be funny to do this for a podcast. And so what we do on here is, in addition to just bullshit about screenwriting, which is what we're doing right now, we also just pitch fake ideas for movies to each other. And we're going to do some of that today, but you know,
right now.
So that was the longest. All right, I am getting distracted watching this. I'm turning off Mindhunter. That was the longest intro that we've done, but maybe the most clear in explaining who we are and how we got to be doing this. And this is how we have fun after we spend a hard day working, and maybe it's fun for you guys to listen to. I don't know. But Kate, you had an idea that you really wanted to do. You texted me about this a couple days ago, incredibly excited, and I just didn't. I said I'm not even going to tell. I want you to. You got some stuff, so tell me about it.
So I was going back and forth. Like, do I tell the origin of the idea first, or do you talk about it and then go, here's how? And what I decided on is you got to tell the origin, because I think it is good. So I was at the gym on Thursday night.
I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, it was Thursday, and then because then Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, you told me on Friday. Yeah.
I'm at the gym. It's like, I don't know, 7, 8 o'clock. Place is packed.
It's packed at 7 or 8 o'clock. I guess it would be.
Yeah, because it's like everybody's off work, and like you see the weekday like gym people.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I go to Gold's Gym, which I love because...
Do you want
to
tell which one so everyone can go there and watch you work out?
don't
do that.
You know what? No, I love Gold's Gym.
Go to every Gold's Gym, if you're curious. Go to every Gold's Gym location in the greater Los Angeles area. It's the least one. It's the one you least suspect.
But I love it because it's just... I think every man in there is gay, which I know is not true, but I just love these, like... When you do see, like, two gay men beefed up come in, they're like, you know... Like, one's, like, doing a little kick with his leg, and the other one's, like, you know, hitting him on the butt. I just think it's, like, it's so fun, and it's a fun environment. And
it's
they're
a better
all
atmosphere,
just,
yeah.
Yeah. And you can see things. Like, I'm 32, and I can feel my eyes start to go. They have fluorescent lighting in there. If you go to, like, some of these other gyms, it's, like, dim lights.
Oh,
and
yeah?
It's trying to be all moody.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
I belonged to two other gyms before this.
That orange one or whatever?
Orange there, but, yeah. But like... Everything's so dim, and like I can't see my hand pick up the weight, and it's like sexy, and it's like a club, and I don't want
sure,
that. Like,
sure.
I love Gold's Gym because everything's lit.
Yeah.
Institutional,
I might say.
Anyway, I'll get to the good part of the story, which is I'm doing you know, I'm like in the middle of all these dudes like lifting my weights on the machines, And I look over, and this is, again, why Gold's Gym is the best, is there's this, like, tall, lanky, tall drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kind of had a Michael Phelps face, but, mm-hmm. and I guess Michael Phelps is tall, but, like, yeah, super slim. He's like super but, tall. Like, super, this guy's, like, super slim.
Okay.
V-taper and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I knew
he
had
a good look. Yeah.
Oh, the reason I knew he had a V-taper was because he was wearing a baby pink crop top with cursive writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
White cursive writing.
White on pink. Okay.
And he also had short black shorts on.
Mm-hmm.
And then knee high baby pink socks.
Wow, that's a look.
Yeah. Now, the important thing in all of this is the writing that mm-hmm. was on the crop top.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, Daddy's Princess.
Daddy's Princess.
And I thought, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I texted Ben. I was like, okay, add it to the Cahoots
yeah,
list.
Yeah.
And then what really pushed it over the edge is I went back the next day and he was there. Same outfit, I shit you not. Like, either that guy went home and immediately did laundry, or this is just, he's like...
Or he's got multiples.
Yeah. He's just kind of... I like the idea of his, like, closet is just...
Oh, yeah. Well, because my mind immediately went to, where did he get the shirt from? Like, is that a shirt that was manufactured to be an ironic shirt for the guy at the gym to wear? Or is that a shirt that he got at Target out of like the little kids section? You know, like yeah. what exactly? Because there's a bunch.
He's trolling.
Is amazing. Yeah. You know, it's hilarious. Wait, so a quick observation that I just think is funny that I think some of our listeners will relate. So the V taper, I've never like I learned that expression recently. I'm not surprisingly into bodybuilding or much of that myself.
I'm the exercise.
I do
like,
some stuff,
you know.
But yeah, I'm not
amino acid. I don't do pre workout. That's too much.
I've never been to a gym before.
Above the two of us, yeah.
Yeah, I'm, well, very, very, very much so. But for gentlemen of a certain age, I'm 34 years old, and I have never been to a gym. I associate that with just Tyler Durden. That's like literally, and I think there's a lot of men that yes. probably, it's like, I didn't know that was a term until like fairly recently, but like if I had to describe that guy, I'd be like, oh, and his abs are like cut like on like Tyler Durden.
Well,
and a lot of
some...
people associate, I do think a lot of, you know.
I remember talking to a trainer yeah. once and I forget, what did he say? He was saying that we were talking about body types and, you know, muscle, no muscle. Do you want to be skinny? Do you want to be built? And he said for like 15 years, every man said, I want to be the shot of Brad Pitt, like standing
no shit, really?
Up in Fight Club. Like,
no, that's it. I mean, that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
And all of my guy friends in high
female,
school.
There was you know, an actress or a model that was like the body, but yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. No, because you yeah. hear women talk about it. Yeah, it's like.
Maybe Angelina Jolie.
That was
like
definitely one
tits,
that you used to hear about
the abs,
back in her
yeah.
in her prime. Yeah, but no, the.
But literally that shot of him with a cigarette in his mouth.
Oh, absolutely.
Where he stands up.
Yeah, yeah, and his shoulders are kind of back, yep. and he's like, yeah, and that was the thing, and of course, that's what it was very funny.
Ladies can have a V-taper too, though.
Sure,
yeah.
sure. Absolutely. Anyway, sorry, that was a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think yeah. it was worth doing. So.
Yeah.
What do you got? What did that.
Well,
your brain, you're at the gym, your brain's just exploding. What were you thinking?
I mean, the obvious one, because of
for a movie
the context.
Title.
Well, no, just the context mm-hmm. that it was presented on a silver platter to me is the story of a gay man, right, with a like you know daddy. But I want to actually hold off on mm-hmm. that because I feel like we can maybe go into that in a minute.
Sure, sure, sure.
The one I want to pitch right now, Have you ever heard of purity balls?
I don't think so.
And not anatomy balls, but like, I'm wearing a gown to go to this ball.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, because I was going to go to like a promise ring kind of situation.
Yes, you're there.
Yeah, because like, okay, so, yeah, because I grew up in we've covered this in the past episode. I grew up in the South in like the evangelical church. And so I believe my older sister had a promise ring. I believe my sister had a promise ring, which is the thing you wear. It's like your engagement to Jesus that you don't take off until you get a wedding ring instead, which means you can have sex. If I remember correctly, and this is probably not just me bragging, I believe when I turned, like, you know, 13 or 14, that my dad was like, you know, they make those for boys too. It's like, and that wasn't, this wasn't me telling my dad like, no, dad, I'm definitely gonna fuck. It was just me being like, yeah, I can do without a piece. I've never worn jewelry before. Like, I think I can do without you spending $100 or whatever it is on a piece of jewelry that says I don't fuck anything. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't think that's necessary for both of us.
Because we both know that my pillow hasn't gone. It was asking for it.
No, I never. No, the pillow was never. I learned about that later from other male friends. But no, yeah. So I'm familiar with the. Was it
Purity Ball? No, Purity Ball though is a whole other level. I had to. So yes, everything that you just said. Like, there is a sort of. So I'm, you know, recap. I'm from Missouri, Southeast mm-hmm. Missouri, Bible Belt. Ben is from Georgia,
South of Atlanta. Yeah.
So both like, you know, both raised, I was raised Catholic. He was mm-hmm. raised specific Christian,
non-denominational Christian church.
Yeah.
Evangelical. Yeah.
And so like big part of our upbringing and lives, in general
was not having sex.
Yeah. Was being shamed and told. Yeah. But what was really, I mean, I did have the fortune of my parents are amazing, and also just my dad's a professor and my mother's a psychotherapist, and they just have like the perfect amount of, I would say cynicism, but I think of it more as like realism.
Sure, sure.
But you know, they were sort of had us in religion and religion classes and all that kind of stuff, but also just sort of like constantly talking to us about, like, you mm-hmm. know, a more kind of critical look at the world and everything. Anyway, all that saying is, I do remember girls around me that did the like promise ring thing. And it always seemed to be like, yeah, like a tie to Jesus and like a mm-hmm. thing, like a promise you made to God and everything. But if you take it a step further, okay, this is where it gets really like fun and crazy and really, really fucking weird. And like, so, they're out of, I think in Colorado, there's some guy that like spearheads this, and he holds these purity balls. So people fly there, you know, with their, like with like these dads and with their daughters, and usually like the mom goes too, but like,
sure.
But they go to these purity balls, and the whole thing is like, these little girls are like, my dad is my boyfriend is like one of the lines that they say. And like, whole idea is like, you're not like, you don't kiss, you don't touch, you don't do anything until, so they interview some of these, like, until you're married, and they interview some of these girls. And this one girl says, you know, I mean, she's got to be like 19 years old. And she's like, I never kissed anyone until my wedding day, like in front of everybody in the church. And, you know, they interview these like little 7-year-old girls who are like, you know, seven to, I mean, it ranges from, I think they kind of start the indoctrination around,
oh yeah,
you know, but like coming to these events like 5, 6, 7, but you know, all the way up. But it's kind of weird because like some of these girls are like, their mom's brushing their hair and their mom's like, you know, mommy's story, mommy, like, basically this, I watched this one interview that was like,
mommy piped the whole squad, yeah. And she regrets it.
And she regrets it. No, it was kind of that though. It was like, well, she couldn't have piped it, but yeah, she, I mean, actually, you know what, she could pipe it.
I'm being gender neutral by sexually aggressive terms.
You know what? She could wear a strap on and totally pipe the whole squad. So I love your feminist stance there, Ben.
This episode's already the most of this. Yeah.
No, but it was, so yeah, but she's like, you know, it was right out of Mommy Dearest. She's like combing her daughter's hair, and she's like, and the little girl's like, well, she's telling the story about how she was engaged before she met her dad. And, mm-hmm. and you know what, you know, while I was engaged to him, I gave away part of my heart. And like, basically mm-hmm. she's literally saying like, I fucked that guy. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, but I got back on track. And then, you know, it's like, the little girl's like, mommy shows that when you, if you love Jesus and you say you're, you know, not say you're, I'm kind of like, say you're sorry and like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
So, but I was watching this, and when I knew that we were going to record today and talk about this one, I went back and watched, because there's like, if you literally Google, you know, purity balls, there's like these 10-minute segments from like Dateline and different places that have done specials on these. And there's also a documentary out there.
Oh man.
But it's like this whole idea of kind of reminds me of that documentary Jesus Camp too.
Yeah, sure, that's just sure, like yeah.
But this whole kind of warped, like bizarre thing around physicality couched in, you know, preservation, but like on the female side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then tying a dad into it. And then this one guy, the guy who heads up these balls and organizes them in Colorado, is like, when the woman interviewing him asks about, you know, like, is this appropriate? Is it actually the best choice? And, you know, this idea of like telling your daughters that you're their boyfriend until they're not, it's like kind of thing. And his response is like, young girls crave touch from a man and it should come from their dad. Like, it's basically like that.
Oh, Christ. No pun intended. Hey.
Yeah. No, it was. Yeah. And it's like, anyway, so.
Wow.
I wanted to.
I'm just making sure I don't like that. I haven't like met. Okay. No, I don't know these people.
All right. Did you look it up?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I'm not going to. I mean, people can do their own work. I just was. Yeah. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Extreme. It's a whole. Yeah. And then they filmed. So in this little 10-minute, you know, snippet of the thing I watched, they showed this man who had three daughters. One's like 17, one's, I don't know, 12, and then one's like too young to be in the mix yet. But the 17-year-old's like...
She's not ready to be touched by her father yeah. yet. Good.
But the 17-year-old's like, you know, I haven't kissed anyone. I haven't... And she's sort of talking about her thing with it and like how... High school can be difficult, but because she has her friends like in this program at church, mm-hmm. it's all fine. And then, so then they're talking to the 12-year-old girl, 13-year-old girl. And she's going from like middle school. She'll soon be going to high school and like this whole thing. And then they fly to the Colorado ball. So they live somewhere else, but they come to the ball.
Oh yeah.
And they,
it's basically like a debutante ball, yeah. or like a, yeah, but for not having sex.
Correct. And the dad, they film all of this. He like gets down on one knee and gives his like 13-year-old daughter oh a ring and basically literally says to her, you know, I'm giving you this ring. Remember to like your dad is your boyfriend. And then also anyone that he's like, this will only come, basically this ring will only come off when a man who I've deemed worthy of you takes it off, like takes this ring off of you. Like
then when I give the keys to your chastity belt
yeah.
to the suitor who I feel can inherit the boat dealership
that I you know. Exactly.
Like, oh so, my God.
So they, you know, and she like takes the whole
These are the guys.
And then it's really funny because I mean not funny, but really the sinister element is when he goes, but the final, you know, the final question that hangs in the balance is, do you accept it? Like, after he gives this whole spiel, and she's 12.
It's like a reality show. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she's like, yes, daddy, I accept. And he like puts it on her finger. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God. He keeps saying daddy over and over again. He's like.
Which is really like, we joke a lot now. I mean, we're all online and we all like a good meme, you know? And I now use the word daddy because it's inevitable in meme culture and jokes and stuff like that. But, like, I remember when that started being a thing, being like, I've never said that word before. Like, I'm sure it did when I was, like, 3 years old or something like that. But it's just, like, not a word that ever really, like, I thought to use.
See, it's funny because one day Annie will come on here, but this is a conversation she and I have had many, many times. And I will say it. But only when I'm on the phone with my dad. Like, I will always call my dad my dad. And then when I get on the phone with him, I'll be like, hey, daddy, what's up? And it's just like, it's not. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because she'll, you know, us being best friends and we've known each other all these years, it's like she knows that I talk about my dad. And then when she'll be in the other room and, like, I'll call him or we'll be, like, out hanging out and he'll call me. And she teases me about it. And she said one time she was with her mom. This is a couple years ago, and she's like, I was shopping and dad called me and I was like, hey daddy. And she goes, my mom looked at me and was like, what? You know, I was like,
yeah.
So I don't know. It's a very, it is a context heavy word. I don't know. I mean,
it's appropriation within culture and this various.
I mean, I also call my dad dude, and he calls me chick, and like that's our thing. I don't know. It's like there's.
I call my dad Dean.
Why?
No. Well, I mean, it's a natural.
It's his name.
Yeah, it's his name, and it just sort of made sense to me at a certain point. But yes, I'm adding myself as exactly the kind of precocious shithead that I was that rejects gifts from my parents and also adopts their first names as things when I was fairly young. But I was going to say, because it'll probably play into if we're going to keep, because I think this is an interesting conversation.
No, anyone who's listening and you're still here after 25 minutes and we haven't even pitched a movie yet. Yes, I am getting to a movie pitch that is, but I just felt the need to sort of give the context because this one's a little bit.
It's going to get interesting. I was going to just throw in there that like, I'm guessing the Venn diagram overlap from the purity ball daddies, and the guys who post the Facebook memes about you know, bringing a gun to meet their girlfriend's dates at the, you know, that whole thing, the guys.
Or their daughter's
dates. Sorry, well, Freudian slip there.
Hey. Yeah, right?
But like, yeah, no, they go meet their, you know, it's like, you know, I'm going to be, you know, like, you better respect me, and I'm going to, you know, like, stand in the prom pictures with their daughters and their dates holding a gun or something like that. Like, that thing, I think it's probably a lot of the same fucking people.
Well, here was the funny thing about the Purity Ball documentary. The B-roll was two things: the girls in their white gowns dancing in little circles, carrying a crucifix, like, you know, a giant one like Jesus did, of like, yeah, that's way bigger than them, you know. Yeah. And they're, but there's, yeah, like,
it's like made out of styrofoam.
It's like 20 of them carrying it.
Oh, okay.
So that was some of the B-roll, and my other favorite B-roll from it was, mm-hmm, dads with swords, just like clinking swords together, and some weird like clink, like standing across an aisle, and they're just dads. Like,
that sounds like,
it's so,
that's so
like dripping and like
almost like pagan,
weird.
Like, it seems like sort of like Scottish Highland, like pre-Christian, like, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like a very, very, very weird. Yeah. Oh God, that's okay. Take us into the movie part so we can make this funny, because it's real. It's real. No, dark. It's, this is dark.
Yeah,
shit.
It's dark. Okay,
but
so
this is, so is it a comedy?
Yeah, this is a comedy. So my pitch for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had mentioned actually Mommy Dearest earlier, but I think it's a Mommy Dearest movie. I think,
okay,
or actually, no, kind of a Carrie movie or something. It could be a version of that where this girl who gets born into this world,
mm-hmm,
and you see her, you know, you have the whole status quo. We see the whole thing happen. And then maybe there's another girl in it who is wise to it. Mm-hmm. Or, and then here, yeah, here's what it is. Another girl in it, maybe she's at camp with her, or there's some sort of, there's all of these events leading up to,
to the ball. Is sort of like, you're setting that as a kind of ticking clock. Like, that's going to be, is that going to be the climax of the movie, or is that?
Yeah, I mean, similarly, like Silver Lining Playbooks, where it's like they're all leading up to this, mm-hmm, you know, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, good example.
And so, but you have this girl who's in this world, and it just becomes like, she goes from being, and I think in the beginning you feel kind of badly for her, you know, she's like, maybe she, and I don't know, maybe, I think she needs to be old enough that we, like, she's got a little bit of wherewithal and agency, so I think she's got to be, like, 16, 17, she can't be 12, uh-huh, but, maybe it's that she moves, she's new in town, or, uh-huh, uh-huh, you know, maybe her parents just got into, the sort of, like, cult of Christianity world, or whatever
sure,
it
sure.
is.
They're, like, they're kind of, like, born again, like, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, she was orphaned and sort of given up, and now this is a foster situation, but that seems like a lot of backstory. Either way,
that's actually interesting, but keep going.
Yeah,
I got,
but either way, she gets dropped into this, and she's already had just sort of a normal bumbling along existence, and now, mm-hmm, she's in this extreme, and she's in it for a minute. Like, she's you know, when we meet her, she's like got her dad and her her daddy.
Daddy.
And you know, maybe she's like 15, so she's not quite, you know, she's sort of like in between the complete adolescent, though. Yeah, girls are maturing faster and faster, but like whatever the whatever that middle space is between you know, getting your first period and like, okay, I'm a woman now. I don't know what that is. But so she's that age. And so she she's doing all these classes. And I think, but there's something interesting about, I don't know, it could be kind of cool if we see this as a status quo. It could also be kind of cool if she's just never been exposed to it, but sort of buys into it right away. But either way, maybe it's her status quo. And then, but she meets, you know, pretty soon meets a girl at one of these things that's sort of like questioning it, or sort of like not
your girl,
a little
that
bit
like
older,
like smokes cigarettes secretly and has the sort of inside kind of like, you know, this is all bullshit kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
and she's, but she may, I think the thing is she's been like newly turned onto it. The mentor girl, the older, the 17-year-old girl. And, Or maybe she's like, it's just not all it's cracked out to be. So, but we see the kind of like destruction that can happen with this. And I'm not saying that it gets like so dark as, you know, pedophilia. I'm not saying any of that, but I do think like just this, I literally just watched this like 10-minute documentary and they're doing all this like sword play and weird, like choreographed white dress dance numbers, and if you're just like, what am I watching? And it's like, I think all of the leading up to that, you know, the rehearsals, the practices, like how, oh, the dads, by the way, too, there was another scene in this documentary where it's the dads at the dinner at the ball all put their hands up and have a pledge, and the guy at the podium reads the thing, and they're all holding these little pieces of paper, and the dads have their hand up reading, I, as the head of the household, of the like, but you know, it's like flowery,
it's like a
flowery
it's
language,
a promise keepers type thing. Oh, the better pledge would be, I won't, you know, molest my daughter, which is the bigger thing, I think. Is
the, you just kind of, you know, the really bizarre thing is like,
good lord,
you go and do the wide shot of that, and you just kind of squint your eyes, and all you see, because they're all wearing suits and stuff, so all you see are just these like silhouettes of these like men in these black suits with their right hands. You're just like, you're kind of like the sea of, and you know, sitting amongst them are just girls, and you're just like, so it's like a bunch of white sitting and then a bunch of like towering sort of shadowy figures going, I will, you know, but again, it's like kind of this like flowery sort of language. Yeah, like I will make sure my daughter is my girlfriend. It's like, what is going on?
Oh God.
So I don't know. I think that there's like lots of weirdness to be had. And then, you know, our girl starts to sort of dip out, and, I don't know. I think the ball could end with like some crazy retaliation, like burn the place down.
Oh, that would be cool. You know? If it was, yeah, like, I mean, that's where you're sort of like grounded version of Carrie type of, like, she doesn't have psychic powers, she just gets enlightened.
What if, though, there is a God, because this, I'm not trying to say it's anti-religion, there is a God, but the God gives her the power to burn the place down.
Oh, that'd be cool. Like, she has some sort of, like Joan of Arc type, like, like, she's, like, contacted, and it's,
Because God's like, hey, bitch, I'm going to help you out, girl. You got this.
Yeah.
I got you.
Just takes the whole... Yeah, I mean, that would be the that's definitely like the one that the people want to see. I came up with something while you were talking.
Yes.
Do you want
to hear
it?
I would love to hear it.
It's a variation on this, and this is maybe... It's completely... I mean, they're all silly, because it's a silly world. And it's very hard, I've found, I mean, I think we maybe even talked about it on the podcast before, and this isn't shaming anybody, because I think it was a noble attempt at a movie, but there was that movie when I was in college or high school, I think you're probably in high school because you're a couple years younger than me, that called Saved, with Mandy Moore. And
I remember that.
I was still very much in that world at the time of evangelical stuff, and a lot of my friends went to private Christian schools, and I recognized that it's like, even the attempt to do it somewhat like realistically still plays as parody. Yeah. It's like it's hard because it's such a slippery slope. Like especially for people who didn't grow up anywhere around this kind of thing. You know, I have friends that are from, you know, the northern parts of the country that like they just didn't grow up with religion and they just it's all strange. It's like you try to show like that documentary to those people, they're going to just be like, what the fuck is this? As they should, by the way. I grew up in it. I'm still like, no, I'm familiar with the concept here, but it's still like, what the fuck is this thing? So I recognize that like what I'm pitching here is not like, it's still over the top, but it would be almost like everything you just said, but you get to the purity ball thing, act two maybe, and it almost plays like a long build up. To where, like, it's like, yeah, all the good intentions were there. Yeah, she's totally bought into it. All this is great. Her dad's her boyfriend until she meets a guy. And then, which is what happens to most of these people. It's like, well, yeah, you know, biological functions that our bodies are designed to do, you know, can kind of override ideological programming when it comes to, especially something that, like, you were given by your parents, this religion, this belief system and stuff like that. And, like, a lot of people, despite their best intentions, end up wanting things that they aren't prepared for, don't understand, but, you know, whatever. And that can mean a lot of different things, and that's where all the sort of shame and the fucked up stuff about religion in general tends to do to people sex.
It's also, by the way, like, who was the, like, was it Minnesota congressman who, like, got caught in the bathroom, like, tapping his foot, doing the whole thing, like, and it was someone who's, usually the people who are, like, most, outright spoken against gay.
Oh, yeah,
but it comes out in different.
It's very common, yeah, yeah. I mean, televangelists and stuff, there's a history of this stuff.
I don't remember where I read this, and so I could be completely wrong in this, so I will be the first to say, preface what I'm about to say with that, but I remember living in New York, and I was reading, there's a great shelter for, called Gyms, and it was and I think it's still in existence in I want to say the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
But it was founded by a woman who was brought into prostitution as a child in New York.
Oh, God.
You know, didn't have a great family, didn't have like a, so she got out of it, started this foundation. I think I don't know if she herself is a social worker like formally, but you know, their work that they do now is if you are a prostitute, and especially like, you know, in so many cases where these girls are like 14 years old standing outside a Port Authority and some, you know, pimp drives by and it's just like, hey, do you want this fur coat and like, you know, $1,000 cash? And do you want this like Birkin bag and all this kind of shit? Mm-hmm. You know, they're just like children going, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so her whole thing is, she made a fantastic documentary. Anyway, long story short, I think it was part of what they covered was, looking at like the people who solicit prostitution, and oftentimes it's, you know, you look at the Catholic Church and priests, and you look at in New York like Hasidic Jews who,
oh, I've heard a lot of those,
yeah,
stories.
And they're one of the, if not the highest, they're like one of the highest, you know, I just want to be careful about like, but
well, no, repressive
but
religious
it is,
communities
it's
as a
suppressed,
whole,
yeah,
yeah.
So anyway, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say that you almost turn it into a long game for like a slasher movie, like, but yeah, like a slasher movie in more like, I consider No Country for Old Men in many ways to be a slasher movie, in that, you know, as a guy with a specific weapon and a specific appearance that is seemingly unstoppable and is hunting people and killing them,
yeah,
in a meticulous and in you know, he's like Jason or Michael Myers or something like that. And like, I think it would be an interesting movie to follow this whole world and to see this like seemingly well-intentioned daddy who has bought into this whole culture of the thing and has taken this like oath very seriously, you know, this notion of like protecting his daughter's
purity. Can I add on that?
Well, they say that like
just
basically she
no, okay. I just want to say, oh, it's like I think it's even to add on to his character, he couldn't or didn't have children, so it's like he adopted this girl, and it's like,
oh,
I
think you would probably have to sort of, which is there's a movie called The Stepfather, which is not this at all, but has some overlap in a sense, and I think that that's kind of what you almost would have to make it not her biological father in order to like the audience would maybe rebel against you on some level if you didn't. But I think like, yeah, what I'm sort of getting at is that like, oh yeah, you know, she ends up, you know, making out with a boy or having sex with a boy, like she has a boyfriend, she falls in love, I mean she's 16, 17 years old and she falls in love for the first time, and it's almost like the idea would be that like out of like a sense of shame and guilt, like they try to run away together or something like that. And it's almost like the dad, if you really want to be generous, you play it as him misinterpreting it as like she was taken by this boy or something. Yep. Like that. And it's like, this is where you get like, and I mean, you know, if you listen to this, you've already, if you've heard any of the other episodes, we make tons of cultural references. And also, I'm sorry if you're a Trump voter or something. I mean, I can't, whatever. But like, this is where you take like basically that, like the jet ski dealership, middle American, like small business owner, shithead, evangelical, you know, misguided, you know, guy that has fantasies of being a special ops dude. You know, this is like the guy with the, has the guns. So I don't know if like, you know, you really want to tie it down. And does he use his ceremonial sword, you know, from the ball thing?
Yep.
Or does he just, you know, go all Travis Bickle and think, you know, this goes back to his days of being in the National Guard and not getting deployed, you know, and now he's going to finally use it to, but it's like basically like, yeah, like the last act or the last half of the movie is this guy, you know, just going after it, and he's going to try and, you know, kill the boyfriend, but, you know, probably the girl as well, ultimately, on some level. Like, it's like that misguided sense of overprotection, and the probably other people, you know, along the way that are standing in his way. And it's like,
I think you definitely want to see, I mean, even in my pitch and version of it, like, you definitely want to see him go all out, but I do kind of love really pushing it. I mean, in my version, he wouldn't go that far.
Yeah,
probably.
I'm pitching like the horror version. Like,
which is kind of great, because you're a horror, you are
version.
A horror
yeah,
writer.
Yeah, I tend to be employed as a horror writer, and I think that, like, you could do this movie, though. I agree that the sort of David O. Russell social realism family drama version is probably the responsible version to actually analyze this issue.
No, but I kind of love... No, but
doing the horror version would be fun.
If you haven't seen Super Dark Times on Netflix, I'm going to plug...
You can do it if you want.
Ben and Luke, Super Dark Times, Netflix. But this is the same kind of sensibility, right?
Yeah, that's, I realized as I was saying that, yeah, it is like a way...
But it's great.
Roundabout, like, yeah, way to get to a horror trope. Because some people would say the same thing about that movie, and I'm fine with that. I think that, like, that's a fun way to go. So yeah, thank you. I'm proud of that movie, and I think that Daddy's Princess, the like Cape Fear. That's
what it is.
That's where
it's
I'm going
Cape
for.
Fear. No,
it's
I
like
love
Cape
that.
Fear
love
if Robert
that.
De Niro was Nick Nolte and became, you know what I'm saying? It's like it's like the guy that becomes unhinged due to all these things, and by the last is Cape Fear. That could be fucking cool. Okay, all ideas copyright.
that would be really good, though, because you start off with this kind of like just a totally different world, and it turns, yeah, I like that. I like that, the Cape Fear Daddy's Princess.
That could be something. So if you want to go to the more obvious ones, or you want to go to other ones, let's just keep going.
Yeah. So in between the obvious one that we'll just have fun with, there's, you said Nick Nolte, and it made me think of, I'm pretty sure it was Nick Nolte. Did you see New York Stories? That was it was three short films. It was
with the Woody Allen, Francis Scorsese, Coppola, and Scorsese one. I've only seen like one of them, maybe like in film school or something.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen the whole movie, actually.
So I didn't see, I only saw Scorsese's, and which I think was the one that was most celebrated.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
so.
In terms,
yeah,
of, yeah. And it was Rosanna Arquette, I know for sure, and I'm pretty sure Nick Nolte. I'm pretty sure Nick Nolte.
That's around the same time, yeah, as, well, no, it's before Cape Fear, but yeah, that makes sense.
Either way, yeah. But it is actually a really great story, and it's so funny because I was actually had, when I first moved to New York, and
did you just rent every movie with New York in the title when you moved to New York?
No, actually, the reason I found out about it was I was pitching my friend Alan Taylor on a movie idea that I had, because I was coming from architecture school, but I had been writing plays, like very bad, horrible, shitty plays.
Is that true? I didn't.
Oh yeah, terrible plays.
I gotta read these plays.
And I was writing short films and all these things, but I was also like working in the art department in TV, mm-hmm, and film, and I was storyboarding. That's how I was paying my bills. But I worked on a show on HBO with Alan Taylor, and I got to know him, who's like phenomenal director, Game of Thrones,
yeah,
fame, Sopranos, Mad Men.
Pilot.
Yeah, Mad Men pilot. But I remember pitching him one day, because he's very generous, to me at least, with just like bullshitting ideas. And I pitched him this thing because this was, to me, it was just like such an, I guess in hindsight, it's like such an obvious grab. But here I was like an artist. I was, you know, I drawing, doing storyboards and stuff. And I thought, you know, this whole idea of like a younger girl and an older guy and the sort of like, and I had also like been going, like when I first moved to New York, I got hip to like the Chelsea art scene pretty mm-hmm. fast. And especially being broke and like not having anything to do on a Friday mm-hmm. or Saturday.
Free wine.
You go down to Chelsea, mm-hmm. all the doors are open in the galleries. I had been an artist since I was a child, so I could like hang and, mm-hmm. you know, chit chat about art history and like whatever. You just go down there. Yeah. Free wine, you know, appetizers mm-hmm. and shit every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember being, you know, kind of hanging around those crowds and then like the sort of self-reflection and then observation of this dynamic in this world and how, you know, so many things work and also just like how we've evolved as a society and relationships and men and women, you know, dynamics. And anyway, so I'm sitting here thinking of all of this stuff and I'm starting to write TV and film and I'm, you know, just chugging along. And I said to him, like, yeah, I kind of had this idea about this like young artist who moves to New York, you know, and she needs a job. She's painting her paintings, but she's got to like make ends meet and also try and network and like do all the things you do when you're trying to start out. And she meets this older artist guy mm-hmm. and like, it's just like sort of the toxic relationship that they have and everything. And he goes, have you seen Martin Scorsese short?
Oh shit. Okay.
In New York Stories, he goes, you literally just pitched me that. But he's like, don't fear, because when they offered me an episode of Sopranos season one, he's like, I was like, there's already a mafia show on. Nobody knows that show. Everybody knows the Sopranos. So he's like, hey, maybe yeah. you're going to make the movie that will, you know, blow that out of the water. And I went home and immediately watched it. And it is a great little, so going to back to our theme mm-hmm. of tonight of Daddy's Princess is Nick Nolte.
I looked it up, but you were right.
So it's Nick Nolte yeah. and Patricia Arquette. Roseanne Arquette. Thank you. Roseanne Arquette. And yeah, she like rolls in and it is just this dynamic of, you know, he's already like a famous artist in 70s, 80s.
80s probably.
Probably 80s. Yeah, but it's, there's that sort of daddy quality of mm-hmm. him taking her in and recognizing a talent. And then, I think it's a short and I can't honestly remember. Like, I think she gets frustrated pretty quickly at his sort of like self indulgence and implosion of, mm-hmm. you know, the fame factor mm-hmm. and everything. And I think he's this like kind of waning artist, I want to say.
Probably,
like, I don't remember all the beats so much as I remember just the mm-hmm. like emotional tie between the two of them. But so I think there's a movie in that I thought about 10 years ago that's yeah. sort of this like daddy and
does it become romantic protege. Or is it
yeah I mean and I think in there I think in his short there were if it wasn't I should rewatch it. I don't remember if there's like actual like moments of like sex and intimacy or if it's just implied, but
no, or it's just the mentor yeah. relationship kind of thing.
I mean, I think that's a really fascinating thing. And especially, I got to say, like, I have a lot of friends and family. I'm from the Midwest. A lot of my friends went into, you know, corporate jobs and, like, comparing notes on, you know, me, like, I mean, going into film, going into the arts. I've always been a freelancer. I've always negotiated my own wages up until having reps that do it for me. But, like, the whole, like, all of the differences that come with, you know, my sister works for Boeing and like mm-hmm. you have an incredible machine behind you when you have issues with mm-hmm. sort of like, how do you find a mentor? Well, there's a whole mentor program and like,
yeah.
how do you deal with sexual harassment? Like she successfully
HR,
has
yeah.
dealt with it twice in her career mm-hmm, at Boeing mm-hmm. and you know, it's like, and they handle it and there's a whole machine that all goes through and you don't have to. And I think there's just something interesting about it. It's not like a victimization thing so much mm-hmm. as it's just like when you're just sort of like floating around, you know, trying to kind of figure out in like an industry that is so wonderful because there aren't rules.
Yeah.
But is also like because of that in nature that there are also these. I've always just thought that, you know, how like looking at all that and also just the dynamics and like what is available to young women in this industry, uniquely mm-hmm. young women. And it's like, yeah, you can be a 22-year-old hot chick
mm-hmm.
and grab power pretty quickly if you're willing to like, you know, take it where you see it and can get it mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. But like what, yeah, like what, I don't know. Like what does that look like? And I've always just been without it, just like more of an examination of it, you know, kind mm-hmm. of from both sides too. And like, you know, also sometimes like, miss, I guess, understanding like what you think is happening at times.
Sure.
So it's like just all of that kind of stuff.
No, if the title was Daddy's Princess, then it would almost be like, yeah, but it's almost like it's like a heightened, exaggerated version of it that would sort of allow for a kind of satire or something. Like, I think that there's definitely interesting, like, I mean, obviously that's, I mean, I'm sure there are other, I mean, there are movies like that, I'm sure, but like, obviously doing something that, you know, was informed by your experience or just like the time you've had thinking about that. Cause it'd be very different for me to make assumptions. I have not yet, being a man, I have to get to the other end of that before that was even available as a experience. And it like, I think that would be an interesting story.
Here's a unique thing. I have a friend, she was in LA. She's since moved away, but I knew her through mutual friends in New York. I moved out to LA about a year and a half later. She moved out here. Mm-hmm. I saw her a couple times. We hung out socially, but she, I remember we were out at a bar. She's a musician amongst, you know, other sort of odd jobs and things. I said, so how do you like LA and how are you adjusting from New York and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff? And, she's like, oh, it's really great. Like I'm living in this apartment and doing all these things. And she's like, tell me all this stuff. And I'm thinking, like, I'm running the numbers going, like, oh, man, like, she's obviously doing well. Like, I wonder what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, 3 or 4 tequilas later, she's like, oh, no, I just went on sugarbabies.com. And, like, my daddy, so he, you know, so it's like he had, like, she was, like, girlfriend two or something, you know? It's mm-hmm. like, and that was their arrangement. And he had an apartment here, and he has this place in you know San Fran or wherever he lives and this thing in here, and like, and we went shopping one day at a farmer's market but it was one of those places where like, you know, you buy jewelry and clothes mm-hmm, and whatever mm-hmm. like we were over, actually no, it's a really good cause, it's a school on Fairfax and Melrose
by Santa Family.
Yeah,
I've parked there
and it's
before.
It's run by the high school students.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. I have a friend that does a clothing booth there. Yeah,
yeah. So check it out if you live in LA. But it's very popular. I mean,
mm-hmm.
already. But she finds this bracelet she likes. It's $75. She pulls out her phone, takes a picture of it, sends it to him, says, $75. Will you give me the money if I buy this? And he says, yep. Get it. And she buys this bracelet, and it's like, just the transactional relationship and the irony, by the way. I mean, this could be another movie called mm-hmm. Daddy's Princess, mm-hmm. except it's more like Princess's Daddy, actually. Yeah. because she
that's actually okay. We're deep,
yeah, it's a whole other thing.
You can't derail it.
Yeah. No, because she, I said, so how is this working? And I'm sitting here going like, oh, you must be getting the short end of the stick. Like you must, I mean, I'm just assuming like, do you feel empty inside at the end of the day mm-hmm. or is this? And she, you know what she said to me? She goes, I don't think he wants to fuck me. And I was like, wait, what? You know, she's just mm-hmm. gorgeous
sure,
girl.
Sure.
And I was like, so wait a second. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, well, he comes to LA once a month for a week for work. And that's why he had the apartment to start with. And,
mm-hmm.
And she goes, he'll come and he just wants to like watch TV and like hang out. And he goes, I know he's got this other girlfriend and, you know, up in the Bay Area. And like, I'm just second to him, but like, all I just want to, she goes, so I just told him I'm going to fuck other guys. And he was like, okay, fine. But she's like, but I want him to like me. And I was like, oh my God. Like, she goes, I'm not even like her. She wanted him to find her sexy. Like, she didn't feel, it was way more rooted in sex.
That's a real dynamic, yeah, right there.
Cause it wasn't like she need it. Well, that's what was so fascinating. It was, I was like, do you feel like your emotional needs are met? And she's like, well, yeah, I mean, we talk like every day, but then like my friends and whatever, she goes, I just want him to want to fuck me. Like, it's almost like she never met a man that didn't want to have sex with her.
No, that's actually pretty funny.
And she was exploitative too. I mean, just like everything she saw, like, you know, I don't think he gave her a credit card, but he would give her cash and then she would like text him and he'd put it in her Venmo account, like,
yeah,
right away.
Yeah.
So it was just like,
he's like a Vol Self, is it FinDom? Is that the financial dominator? He doesn't want to have sex, but he wants to be, yeah. I mean, we're talking about a character here.
And they would. I mean, it wasn't like they did not.
Okay, sure. But the movie version would be the extreme version of that, wherein that it becomes a romantic
Princess's
comedy.
Daddy.
No, that's actually fucking funny. It's a romantic comedy about the sugar baby, you know, like basically trying to get the guy to, like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, they've already met in this non-romantic kind of fetishy thing, but it's about her trying to like win his heart as like an actual partner for her, which is fucking really funny. That's actually, that's a funny kind of like, I don't know, like postmodern romantic comedy about that arrangement being, you know, separated by this, like, and then trying to find something almost traditional within that. That's kind of cool. Like, that could be a cool movie.
Well, and
I don't know. You should write that one.
I mean, hey, I could, in my wheelhouse these days. The funny thing that ultimately I got out of this conversation with her, and, you know, specifically in like their romantic dynamic and whether or not they have sex and how often and all that kind of stuff, was that it ultimately seemed like he just wanted someone to live in his apartment, kind of like while he wasn't
sure,
there.
Sure. Just like, to feel like it was a thing and not like an empty place. Sure. I can understand that.
And that, you know, when you have extravagant wealth, it's like that none of, like, it no longer kind of matters, right? Like, so you're just sort of going, yeah, what's an extra $1,000 a week that you're giving to this person? Because who cares? And
he wanted his, like, Todd from BoJack just also a high girl. Like,
yeah. But anyway, so there's that, I guess that was sort of,
yeah, that's sort of blurred, that we kind of like covered a couple different ones.
Cause I opened with the Scorsese movie.
Yeah. The Mentor one, and then go to that, and then go to the romantic comedy one.
And then the most obvious version of Daddy's Princess.
Yeah. What you got?
Obviously a gay cruise where a young twink goes and meets a,
but wait, sorry, I'm already picturing if it's because it
meets the ultimate like silver fox daddy.
Wait, so when you say gay cruise,
yeah,
what is that a thing, or did you just make that up?
Okay, here's the fun thing. Just like everything, like, here's why I love 2019. There's a lot of things to hate, but one thing I love is like niche society. Like, everything is niche these days.
Oh, and, yeah, sure.
You
sure.
know, from like brick and mortar boutiques that are actually being just owned and bought out by like bigger companies. But you know, we love our like handcrafted whatever.
Yeah.
There is a cruise for everyone.
Apparently.
It used to just be like Disney.
Yeah.
Or every other cruise. Now, like, I have friends that, I have a friend that went on like a heavy metal cruise. Like, can you imagine an entire cruise ship?
Oh, no, metal, absolutely can. Yeah.
Metalhead. So yeah, no, gay cruises are like ahead of everything. The gays are ahead of everything.
Yeah, it was like
the
how there's
like goth
are like
day on a whole
nother
level.
Yeah, gay cruises. So okay,
they were before us on dating apps. They were before us on like
pioneered that whole shit.
Yeah, do you know, and pornography drives like the HD versus
in the same like how the
Laserdisc versus
DVD.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, VHS versus Beta was the first time it happened, and yeah, all the so. All the
porn industry.
What I was gonna say is just that in your movie though, the ship should be called Daddy's Princess, like the cruise, the cruise ship, like painted on the side.
Yes, yeah. I hadn't even thought about that, but yes, 100. Because there's already Princess
Yeah.
Cruise lines. But yes, yeah. Daddy's Princess.
So it's almost like if it looks like they was like bought a boat that some has to like paint. It's just like, it just, it, like, that is like a sort of self-aware, funny joke.
Yes.
That is so that it's the title of the movie. The title is the logo that's on the boat and this thing. And it's all this like, so a sort
also,
of gay romantic comedy on a cruise ship is what you're getting at.
Yes. And I kind of want like a drone shot where we see the top, like the top of the ship,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's out there partying.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, all like it's 50-50 all it's like silver foxes over here, mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. like twinkie
yeah, sure.
blondes on this side, and you just see like the yeah. you see a mix.
Yeah, it's like a battle from Lord of the Rings, but they
yes
but instead of, you know, clashing spears or whatever.
Oh, they're clashing spears.
Oh yeah, I kind of said, I walked into that one, didn't I?
So yeah, I mean, that's, to me, that's like, that's Daddy's Princess.
Yeah, I mean, that's
and you calling, I don't know how that slipped right past me. That
yeah, the
be,
boat.
The boat would be called Daddy's Princess.
Well,
of course.
We might have a cover for this episode.
Hi-yo.
Well, on that, I mean, we've gone an hour, so I think that was a successful...
Yeah, we covered
you really
lot.
Brought hopefully it this
people,
one.
Hopefully people stuck through. Yeah, that was... I felt very passionate.
You came
about,
locked and loaded.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. I just responded.
No, you had some really great ideas.
Oh, no, I mean, I didn't say I didn't actually do anything, but it was not required for me. I sat down being like, Kate's gonna take the driver's seat on this one, so, and I loved it.
Yeah, I feel like I earned my keep on Daddy's Princess.
Oh.
I, you know, anything, I love the gays so much.
I mean, you know,
favorite people,
they're good guys.
Yes, love gay men, love them.
And it inspires a lot of your ideas, so
yeah.
So we can write every version of this movie, but especially that last one.
Which, like, we did the least amount of talking about, but everyone
yeah,
just,
but
everyone's
it's,
like,
it's,
yeah,
it's,
we
yeah,
get
we,
it.
Yeah, yeah, you don't
we follow to... Drinks for Gays on
yeah,
Instagram.
Yeah.
We know
like,
what's up.
We yeah. know, we've seen the memes. We yeah.
Yeah, best of Grindr. Love ya.
All right. Well, thanks. This has been Cahoots. You can subscribe on iTunes and Spotify and all the other ones. But
which is
do.
So delightful.
Yeah. Thanks to Anchor for making that happen. And, you know, tell your friends if this is entertaining or funny.
Yeah.
Cool.
Please, I hope you enjoy Daddy's Princess. Are you a daddy or are you a princess?
Everybody's kind of one or the other if you think about it.
Princess over here.
Obviously a daddy. I mean, listen to me. Jesus. Okay. Good night, folks.
Good night.